How goes it?
It goes well. It goes well indeed.
Ah, good.
Okay, let's get down to business.
Go for it.
Okay, first of all, let's start off with the news. Okay, Al Gore did know what he was doing from the White House was wrong. Just thought he wouldn't get caught. Hasn't admitted that yet. However, somebody did say that they drove him across town so he could make campaign calls on another occasion. So he was aware that it was an illegal move. Again, the nuns and the monks in the Buddhist temple, he knew that was a fundraiser. Okay. Christmas has been cancelled. Anyway, in a serious note, let's hand over to the next speaker.
Already.
Okay, dude.
What's up, Jerry?
Okay, morals and coercion.
Oh, Lord.
Here we go. Morals and coercion are very important due to the power of suggestive thought from the mind. The reason being that they are so important is the harm that can be inflicted on an individual by stray thoughts of a coercer, and the fact that this can lead to an alteration in a person's pathway in the life's journey that the coercer takes responsible for. These actions have to be monitored very carefully, and stray thoughts from a coercer can cause problems in such a way that it can be a continuing problem, not for just one life, but for many lives to come. So it is necessary to learn self-control above all others. Having thoughts that interact with other people, being able to manipulate other people, is a wonderful skill. But misuse of this skill in itself can present major problems. The necessary undertakings of a coercer have to be done with a good and clear conscience. The important ramifications of negative actions of a coercer can lead to a self-destructive pathway of the coercer and the coercee. The responsibilities that a coercer takes upon herself when she is coercing is something that the coercer has to weigh with a good, clear conscience. I repeat those words, with a good, clear conscience. Now, coercion in itself has many different types of usages, and each use has its own set of necessary rules. Let us take everyday coercion, which is the most common that is used. What is right for the individual, and how to use a coercive being to control somebody else? Again, it has to be done with a clear and good conscience. What is right? As has been stated in the past, what is right for me may not be right for you or whoever. But coercion in itself, in the everyday mode, is something that does not cause too much problems because the situations do not arise where serious damage can be done. But damage can be done, and it should be looked at carefully. If you want to coerce somebody to move out of the way, come to you, to sit down, to be quiet, these are all useful things of a personal nature. When you have an express idea to coerce an individual, that is where it becomes more serious. And in its serious nature itself lies problems that a coercer may come into, a moral dilemma. Now, there are a whole load of morals that are necessary for a coercer to live by. Doing the right thing. Not just the right thing for herself, but for everybody involved. So when a coercer decides that she has to coerce, it is necessary for her to weigh what she is doing and to look at it, necessarily to come to a compromise. And in that compromise is the starting of morals. Moral one, be prepared to compromise. Moral two, do not do it for self-gain. Self-gain has certain clauses. Self-gain in progression in one's occupation. For example, a coercer wishes to coerce so that she can get a better position with more fiscal gain, so that she can provide for her offspring and therefore improve their lives. This is not a negative use of coercion. But using coercion in a way that she gets a willing partner who is easy to coerce to create a new life within her, that in itself is negative coercion, because that is for self-gratification to continue the life. That is not done from love. That is done from lust. Lust itself has to be addressed as a moral. It has to be laid out and carefully analyzed. Lust is an interfering factor that cannot be used in coercion, because that in itself leads to negative actions. Once you start on that slippery path on using lust to judge your moral standards, lusting for wealth, lusting for somebody, lusting for a contented, self-centered lifestyle, these are all negative and should not be tried, because, again, that affects the long outcome, not just one life, but many lifetimes. Okay, moral number three, purity of heart. Nobody that I know has a 100% pure heart, but by using logic and understanding and reasoning, something can become pure in your opinion. This is important. Your opinion is the opinion that you must base your moral and coercive attempts upon. With the pure mind that you perceive that you have, then coercion becomes easier. Deciding and judging whether something is right, whether something is of good intent, whether something will benefit something. These are all subcategories of purity in coercion. Coercion in these functions serves as a useful everyday tool, but not everybody can be a good coercer. So if you're in that, do not coerce. Now, specific subjects to coerce. People of a destructive nature. I believe my sister has covered in great detail people of destructive nature. But using coercion is a little bit like talk therapy. And again, it has to be done very carefully and cautiously. You do not replace one set of problems with another set of problems, or as my sister said, waveform patterns of the brain. This is important to be understood, that when dealing with somebody of destructive nature, you must know when to say no and to disengage. Otherwise, you will join them in their negative, addictive behavior. And therefore, your own waveform patterns in your brain will be changed. This will lead to serious psychological and mental problems in a coercer. When a coercer uses these new set of destructive patterns that they have become addicted to, they proceed down a very nasty, dark path where the coercion becomes corrupted and festers within the individual. Again, there are certain morals when you're using coercion for a psychoanalytic purpose. One is, do not use it to start off with. This is because when you are using it, first of all, you have to gain the person's confidence naturally without using any coercive skill whatsoever. Two, if the person does not achieve your confidence or you achieve their confidence, do not coerce them. Three, having achieved their confidence, you coerce a little, a tiny, tiny bit at first, so that it becomes a suggestive thought within their brain, but not a command. As you progress and deal with the problem, now you can start to insert commands, but these commands must be thought out carefully. That is moral number four. Think out your coercive commands carefully. When you have constructed a necessary framework upon which they can build their improvements, now you sit back and watch your pupil or your patient develop for themselves. That is moral number five. Learn when it is appropriate to disengage in a healing of a psychoanalytic nature. Having let them form new structures on the framework that you have given them, you can now start to help them to progress into a more secure way of thinking by constructing extensions to the framework that you have created. You have given them the opportunity to grow. That is moral number six. Aiding in growing what is beneficial for them. Not for you, but what is beneficial for them to progress on their path. And in their progression, they will find that you are no longer a necessary tool, that you are somebody that is now a friend. That is rule number seven, letting go. When the time is appropriate, let them go. Now, following coercive psychoanalysis, coercive healing, which is normally done in the presence of a healer. The healer does the healer's business, and the coercer opens up the mind to make it more receptive to be able to aid in the healing. Aiding in the healing is very important. It speeds up the process. But it is also necessary for the coercer to understand the purposes and function of the healer. So we have a moral here, moral dilemma. Is it appropriate for a coercer to know anything about healing? Oh, yes, it is. It is very important. That is why I'm not a coercive healer, is because I do not understand healing, in my opinion, well enough to be able to aid in the healing process. But a coercer that knows nothing about healing can help to a certain extent by soothing the person's consciousness and subconsciousness and distracting them whilst the healer goes about their business. Humor in coercion. Coercion can be very humorous, actually. Not many people realize that a lot of fun can be had with good, positive coercion. Practical jokes are something that coercers enjoy tremendously. And in doing so, you again have to be careful of planting too deeply within the subconscious a set of commands. These have to be done very lightly on the surface, but I do not recommend that everybody goes around practicing coercive pranks. That is for the more adept and experienced coercers. I enjoy doing it myself quite a bit, actually. But that is a moot point. But as I was saying, coercion has a very useful tool in humour. Being able to make somebody see that what they have done is extremely silly by making them look without their sails so that they are seeing themselves from somebody else's point of view makes them realise that some of the things that they have done are very silly and funny. When you are coercing, regardless of whether it is comic coercion, physical healing coercion, mental healing coercion, or everyday coercion, it is important to remember that it has to be done for the best of all parties or the individual that is being coerced, not for your own personal gratification. But as I stated, there are the few exceptions. One is for an improvement for yourself so that you can provide better for your offspring or those that are dependent upon you. Another one is if it is of a destructive nature and the person can serve no function from the learning experiences incurred by that destructive nature. Three, another example, is where it becomes dangerous and the person is not aware that their behaviour has become dangerous because they have not perceived that it is dangerous, but you have. It is your duty at that point to coerce, as a coercer, them into a safe or an environment that is no longer threatening for the group or themselves if they are not aware or are not suffering from psychological problems. A lot of ifs, ands, buts, ors in there, but they're all important. Overall, coercion is a great tool, but has the power to corrupt if you do not think your actions through carefully. Most people on the third dimension do not have the speed of thought to be able to analyze and realize what their actions are going to achieve on the instant. They have to think and plan accordingly in advance. There are simple structures that can be put in as a tool for coercion. First of all, stop. Think about what you're going to do. Think of all the possible outcomes. These three things will help you decide if it is right or wrong. Unfortunately, you can't make a decision in a split second. You can go on gut feeling and instinct, but sometimes gut feeling and instinct is inaccurate. If you are ever in any doubt, do not, I repeat, do not, I repeat, do not coerce. Do you have any questions?
One or two.
Okay.
All right. First off, when you're using negative coercion, okay, or for a negative purpose, is the penalty that you accrue through the use of that karmically equal to what the negative coercion you are, or does it, is like you get
it is amplified
worse?
You get backlashed a lot worse. It is amplified.
Why is that?
That is because you are sending your negative energy that creates negative energy from the person that it hits, which is returned with your negative energy and their negative energy and anybody else's negative energy that it interacts with.
Okay. Third dimensional use, for example, as you stated, when using it to acquire financial gain, you're still incurring a karmic debt there, aren't you? Or they'll call it a karmic loan.
Yes. Could you expand upon that? Because what you're saying is, for personal gain, is that personal gain only for, let's say, myself?
Let's use the example you gave.
Okay.
Getting a better job so that you can feed your children. Okay, now, is that a karmic debt that's accrued?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all, because you are, in actual fact, paying a karmic debt. You are, because you are involving your offspring, whether it is one child or many children. you are therefore providing for them so that they have a better chance to advance. And what you are doing is sacrificing a little bit of your self for them so that they can have a better environment. This makes it non-karmic because you are doing it for the common good of your children.
Well, this is the first time we've actually included children. Usually it's been just you yourself getting financial gain. If there is no children, wouldn't it be better not to use it at all?
It depends on the set circumstances. There are so many different variables that could be interjected. We could sit here and analyze this one in itself indefinitely. Let us say you are the best person suited for that job and that you see that with you doing that particular function, you would improve the people that you're working for. You'd improve their lifestyles. You'd improve the growth of the organization you're working for and the overall group, the people that are dependent upon them. Again, that is like having children. You are sacrificing yourself for others. That makes it good. When it is specifically for your own personal gain and your own gain alone, so that you can accrue vast financial gains, then it becomes negative because it serves no other purpose than for yourself. However, if it is part of a long-term plan that by making yourself fiscally stable, that you can settle down and find a bondmate who is willing for you to sacrifice yourself, continue this function so that they can raise the offspring or to be taken care of by you, then you are involving somebody that you are sacrificing for so that they can be better off themselves.
I see. So essentially, if we look at it from a higher point of view, higher dimensional point of view, we're actually the ones who are going to judge this in the long run.
Correct.
We're going to be able to look at it from the point of view after the fact, when we determine whether or not we did negatively or positively.
Correct.
So we'll have all these factors to add in at that point.
Correct.
So the time you just work with your intuition.
Correct. It is something that when you are dealing with something like advancement within a organization, it is not now that you are thinking about. It is later.
Thank you. Okay. Now, for when you're using it for healing purposes, I'll go on to that section covered.
Okay.
In which you're working with patients or subjects. Now, the use of coercion will tend to bond these people too.
Okay, first of all, let's differentiate between mental healing and physical healing. Okay, which one are you talking about?
Physical
healing. I know very little about physical coercion. That's why I skipped over it very lightly.
Okay, how about mental?
Mental, yes, I know how to do that.
Okay, now won't these tend to bond themselves to you?
Yes, but as I explained, that knowing when to stop the coercion is important. Being able to ease the person away from you is also important, and the necessary skills involved in that. People will tend to see you as some wonderful person. And the normal thing to do is to let them continue seeing you as a wonderful person. And when they find out that you are fallible and you do make mistakes, then your image will be tarnished. They may even be disgusted and turn around and head straight back to their negative pathways. If it is done carefully and in a particular way, for example, let us take a fictional person. Say I heal somebody that has suicidal tendencies and they latch onto me. Now, I have to make them realize that I am not all wonderful, that I am not all good. So I would do things that would raise a question in their mind. I would discuss with them, and as I'm discussing with them, I would insert the thought that I am fallible, that Kiri Tanaka makes mistakes. So therefore, the seed is planted for them to think that I am fallible, that I am, after all, only Syrian, and I do make mistakes. Then I would deliberately make a mistake, just a small one. But I would wait a decent interval of maybe a few hours or a few days and make a mistake. And they would see that I make mistakes. And that would make them think. With the coercive seed that is planted, it is like pouring water on the seed, that it would start to germinate. And they would still think I'm a good person. But Kiri is, after all, only Syrian, and she does make mistakes. You see?
Okay.
But it has to be thought out from beginning to end, from the start of the mental healing to the end of the mental healing. It has to be thought out bit by bit by bit.
All right, this takes us to my last and most important question of them all. In six-dimensional, especially on Sirius,
mm-hmm.
you have schools
mm-hmm.
that teach coercion, that yes. teach all the basics you just went over.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have anything like that down here. Well, can we start something like that down here? If we're, like, for example, like this on the web, this is going out to people all over the world.
Correct.
Well, how about people start schools of coercion?
Yeah, it's something that I can't interject. I cannot say what will work down there. I only know what works on Sirius and what worked in the past.
Right.
So therefore, I can't say, go ahead, create schools.
Oh, I know, but I mean, it would seem to make the most logical sense that we put in a theory into an actual hands-on.
Well, there actually are a set of educational facilities that do handle coercion, or rather, they set up the morals to handle coercion. And these are religious educational facilities that teach good morals. Unfortunately, most of them are aimed towards making priestesses and priests, but these things can apply.
Right.
That the morals of being pure of heart and good and so on, and thinking things through, are there already. It is just a matter of being able to spread them and to be able to get everybody to follow those positive thoughts and to achieve that goal.
Okay. It's fine with me. It just seems a little bit of a shaky institution to be teaching coercion. They don't call it coercion.
No, they don't.
And so you're not really learning the basics of how to deal with coercion.
No, you're not, but indirectly you are, because it teaches the moral structure. I will admit, I'm very playful. I enjoy making love tremendously. But I do have very strong morals. I will not do anything that will harm anybody. That would, I think, fall under thou shalt not kill. I will not use coercion to cheat. I will not use coercion to take somebody away from their bondmate. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's husband. I will not use coercion to cause destruction. Thou shalt not kill. I will not use coercion to get somebody under my sway to do my bidding. Whatever that is, thou shalt not steal. You see?
Yeah. I understand that. It's just mm-hmm. we have those same principles we learn in Sunday school.
But it's the principles that are useful. You can take the Ten Commandments and use them in a way that is a good moral tool on making the correct decisions for coercion. And by wording them carefully and slightly differently, you can lay down 10 laws of coercion. They are not suggestions. They are things that you obey.
All right.
You see? Mm-hmm. Okay. Any more questions?
No, that's all I got right now. I have to think about this.
Mm. How long did that take? That took up quite a bit, didn't it?
Not that long.
But we started that.
About 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it is basic behavioral patterns that are important within coercion. You see, coercion through the ages has been used and abused.
Right.
On our home planet, Tonar, the corrupt, powerful coercer. Good example. Great example. Tonar the Magnificent, also a corrupt coercer. That was after the Ascension. Hura, the Brave, another corrupt coercer, although he did try to redeem himself. That is why he's called Hura, the Brave, because he did great harm in his youth. But he started to understand the moral dilemmas that he had created and the necessary plans and actions. Actually, he's a good example of what was thought of as negative coercion to start with, turning out to be good in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but where is Honar the Brave?
Hurrah. He's been dead for quite a few thousand years.
I mean, old buddy, but reborn and reborn and reborn.
Mm-hmm.
He must have achieved some sort of enlightenment from his turn of ways. He might be on someone's council now for all we know.
That is something that we would not concern ourselves with, because what he had done in the past, he had learned from.
Correct. Well, that's what I mean. He went through the necessary lessons.
Yes, but at the time, what he did was he had people constructing and cutting down and clear-cutting an area. Did great harm to the land, and he had an industrial complex and all the yucky pollution that goes with that. But from the research facilities and the things that were related to that came out were good things that were able to clear up the area that he had destroyed and replant it and return it back to how it was. He had done great harm in his first 500 years. And when he realized that he was heading on a very negative path, and all these people that were in his control, that did his bidding, that had no thought of anything else but to appease their master, he started to change and to realize that he had to redeem himself by doing things and restoring the balance, what it had took him over 450 years to do. He restored it in 200. And restored the balance and also the technological advances that came from his corrupt period in agriculture, horticulture, all the necessary interactions with that from that period in his life, in the long run, became good. See, they had to, or he had to go through those steps to achieve where he was going. So it was looked upon to start off with that he was doing great harm. But when he decided to change radically and to advance towards a specific goal that would be good, he had to make some very hard and dangerous choices, which made him look very brave. hence the name that he got in the last 350 years of his life. He didn't live to be 900 because of how hard he pushed himself in the last 350 years. He pushed himself very hard. And his actions were looked upon as very brave and long-reaching. And by taking those gambles and putting in action a whole load of events that are still even felt today, the love for the land in that area is beyond belief.
That's it. Well, thank you. That makes a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions? Mm-hmm. You've got questions, but you just want to get me out, don't you?
Well, I want to consider about time.
Ah, okay.
Come on back later if you want to.
We'll see. Okay.
That's you.
Hello. Okay. I'm going to put on the next important speaker.
All right.
Greetings, Ross.
Greetings, Omar. Good to see you back again.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Let us look at Kiri's dissertation. Long. Very long. Very informative, very eloquent, and a little muddled in patches, but it works out nicely in the long run. There's very little to edit, apart from the little bit of frivolous chit-chat in the middle there. Okay. Tia's brief dissertation at the start, or cute stabs at humour. She should not eavesdrop before channeling sessions, but that is Tia. That is her humor. Okay. Let us get down to business and address a new set of topics, a new subject. Development of the South. It is a little step from what we've been dealing, which is self-love, self-loving morals, the benefits of the group. This is now a discussion or a dissertation on the individual and individual growth, individual spiritual development. And then looking at the development and the understanding and the consciousness necessary to achieve growth is something that is up to the individual. Is it right to force, as Kiri would put it, your point of view on somebody? That is up to you. That is part of the learning of self-growth, making that decision. We cannot tell you it is right or wrong, or I cannot. It is up to you to formulate for yourself if something is right or wrong. And in the growth that comes from these internal debates, and that is what they are, internal debates, is the advancement. With the interaction with other people, you grow, you learn, you breathe. You live. You grow. And growing is what all my dissertations are about, indirectly. They give you a framework of patterns, as Kiri said, a framework to build upon. And in doing so, the growth that comes within yourself blooms into a flower, which can be seen externally. The confidence that you walk, the weight in your voice, the appearance of understanding, the appearance of people needing to seek you out for your advice. This comes with self-growth. and self-understanding. And with this understanding and growth, you can start to affect other people. But growing for oneself is important. To be conscious of how you interact and develop and the love necessary for you to advance. Are you awake for us?
Of course I'm awake.
You're breathing deeply.
Well, that's the cat.
Ah. Yes, so it is. But growing and taking care of yourself. Kiri talks about what is right or wrong for the individual or the person that is being manipulated. But it is also important, first of all, for yourself to grow and what is right to help you grow. Set circumstances occur in your life that challenge you and make you grow. And the growing is important. How you grow is up to you. As I've stated many, many times, I can't tell you how to grow, how you should grow, why you should grow. That is up for you to understand and reason out. Do we have any questions?
Yes, when you mentioned about the necessary love that needed to grow from, you have to achieve that through a long process of learning how to love.
Correct. It goes back to my dissertation that I believe you have just put on the internet about self-love.
Self-love, correct.
And even though this is the next step on and over, it does interact with my previous dissertations that I have given in the past.
Right.
And in a way, they interact with the dissertations that Corton has given about communication. If you were to put Corton's dissertations, his last two dissertations, and my last three dissertations together, and put them side by side, you would see that there are certain patterns and structures that are formulated together, which set up necessary structures to be built upon.
Okay. When you speak on the growth and the love necessary, we're actually dealing with a question of strength, aren't we? I mean, it's easier to not love, almost. And it takes more strength, I think, to love everything. It does just be ambivalent. Or
yes, ambivalent is a better way to describe what you were thinking.
Right.
Not to love suggests the opposite.
Okay, no, not to. It's just, you know, apathetic, ambivalent. Just, you don't care about things. You just deal with them and you relate to them in a way that it's just, yes, life. That's the easy way out.
That is the easy way that achieves nothing. You do not grow.
Right. So you're talking about actually gaining an amount of strength as if you're exercising your muscles, if you're going to the gym.
Yes, yes. In a simplified way, yes.
Okay, well, that's what I'm trying to work with this. In a simplified way to let people understand more how to take your lessons and mm-hmm. how to apply them in their lives.
Correct. In a simplified way, yes. But it is a little bit more complicated than just learning how to love. It is learning how to interact when not to love, when not to do something, when to do something, why you do something, why you do not do something. It is a set of structures that are there to be built upon that works for you. As has been stated, what may work for me may not work for you. This should be put down as a commandment, but we do not give commandments. It would be a good idea to say this is a suggestion for growth. What works for you may not work for me.
So let's say that you have a person who's just like as we mentioned, apathetic on life in general, loves occasionally. You know, like is happy about movies and certain events in his mm-hmm. life and things he reads in the news. And other times it's the other way, the other direction. Would it then be an ideal way to do this is to start selling a regimen of, you know.
No, it would not. And this is why.
Okay.
That when you see that something is wrong and you set up a regimen, you are creating strict, non-flexible pathways. There has to be times where an individual hates something, and at other times that individual loves that same object that they hated. It is a balancing act.